Welcome to ISU On Stage, a new radio show that highlights the wealth of talent right here on our ISU campus. Each week, KISU is proud to present recorded music, theater, and other exciting collaborations performed by ISU students and faculty. For this week, we'll be listening to the recordings of student actors performing scenes from the theatrical works of Antoine Chekhov. All of these scenes you are about to hear were learned and performed as part of a class taught by Professor Vanessa Ballum in theater. To open our program tonight, we will hear from Professor Ballum on the life and significance of Chekhov. Much of the information Professor Ballum will give comes from the article Antoine Chekhov, The Role of the Author in Russian Society, written by F. Joseph Dressen. A link to this work is at kisu.org/programs.
Hello, my name is Vanessa Ballum, and I'm an associate professor of theater and head of the acting program here at Idaho State University. I'm so pleased to be able to speak about one of my favorite playwrights, Anton Chekhov, as well as share some of his dramatic works with you via performances of our ISU theater students. Let's start with some details regarding his life and works. Anton Pavlovich Chekhov was born in 1860 in Taganrog, Russia. He was a playwright and short story writer considered to be among the greatest writers of short fiction in history. And he's the most frequently produced playwright after William Shakespeare. It's been said that Anton Chekhov was and continues to be a moral compass against which generations of Russians have measured their own lives. Chekhov's societal impact reflects the importance of the role of authors in Russian society. For example, even in 2005, the passing of American playwright Arthur Miller arguably evoked a wider response in the Russian press and cultural circles than it did in the United States. Historically, Russian authors have been prominent commentators on society and politics, and that tradition continues today. In addition to his literary works, Chekhov played a vital role in Russian society. As a medical doctor, Chekhov participated in the first effort to perform a census on Sakhalin Island. He interviewed and treated thousands of political and criminal prisoners and settlers over the course of 3 months. Shocked by what he saw, he wrote a book titled The Island of Sakhalin, documenting his experiences. As a result of Chekhov's work on the census and his book, Russian society was confronted with their first exposure to the terrible living conditions and treatment of prisoners and settlers on the island. Back home at his country estate, Milikhavo, he built schools and hospitals for the poor and continually treated poor patients, often for free. In his hometown of Taganrog, he supplied books for public libraries and endowed institutions that provided basic education for the needy. Chekhov, however, never held himself up as an active example of humanitarianism. Instead, he kept his philanthropy private. Chekhov also intentionally refrained from delivering moral or political sermons in his literary works or his public statements. Born into the first generation of a family of freed serfs, Chekhov felt that inner freedom was more important than political or social freedom. Chekhov's struggle to attain this freedom was painful work. He wrote that he was always trying to, quote, squeeze out the slave in me, unquote. This focus on the internal struggle for freedom was reflected in Chekhov's artistic works. Chekhov understood that no sermon can make a lasting impression and that no generic example or recipe for personal fulfillment exists. Instead, Chekhov suggested that his fellow Russians should make their own personal choices and solve their own moral dilemmas. In his writings, Chekhov would point out what the dilemmas were and what alternative paths might exist, but he would keep his personal views on them completely private. He understood that everyone was different, and therefore all individuals would have different paths, different destinies, and different callings. Chekhov's lack of directness actually opened him up to criticism and misunderstanding. He was criticized by some both during and after his life for his lack of directness and for, quote, not living in his work. Actors would question him on how to interpret the characters in his plays, and Chekhov would invariably tell them that all the necessary information was in the text, although the clue might be as subtle as the character entering a scene wearing a fancy tie. During Chekhov's life, many of his contemporaries said that the very idea that somewhere in Yalta lives the writer Chekhov made their hard lives bearable. They felt that Chekhov never lied to them, and that if he told his readers how difficult the life of a Russian was, he never forced upon them his own personal way of overcoming this difficult reality. Chekhov influenced Russian society not by his example, but by his very existence. What you're about to hear are dramatic scenes from my advanced acting realism course. You will hear selections from three of Chekhov's most famous plays, and I will give a brief synopsis of each play to give a little context. So let's start with The Cherry Orchard. Written in 1903, Chekhov described this play as a comedy with some elements of farce. Though Konstantin Stanislavsky, the great acting theorist who worked with Chekhov on this play at the Moscow Art Theater, felt that it was a tragedy and he treated it as such. With Chekhov's works, the Moscow Art Theater was experimenting with this invisible fourth wall concept, where the actors perform as if completely unaware of the audience, and the audience is able to witness the realistic world and lives of the characters through that fourth invisible wall. This tradition is very prevalent and continues today in realistic theater. Let's talk about The Cherry Orchard. The play The Cherry Orchard revolves around Lyubov Ranevskaya, an aristocratic Russian landowner who returns to her family estate, which includes a large and well-known cherry orchard, just before the estate is to go up for auction, as the family has been unable to pay the mortgage. Unresponsive to offers to save the estate, the family witnesses the sale of the estate to Lopakhin, the son of a former serf whose family worked the land. At the end of the play, the Ranevskaya family must leave their beloved home, and as they depart, we hear the sound of an axe upon wood as the cherry orchard is destroyed. The story presents themes of cultural futility, both the futile attempts of the aristocracy to maintain its status and of the bourgeoisie to find meaning in its newfound material gains. It dramatizes the socioeconomic forces in Russia at the turn of the 20th century, including the rise of the middle class after the abolition of serfdom in the mid-19th century and the decline of power of the aristocracy. You're going to hear two scenes from The Cherry Orchard. The first is from early in the play when the sisters Varya and Anya are reunited with one another. Caitlin Miller will portray Varya and Rachel Guerra will portray Anya. The second scene is between Lyubov Ranevskaya and Trofimov and occurs during a party at the estate, which is happening simultaneous to the estate's auction. Ranevskaya will be performed by Elaine Bell and Trofimov by Jacob Wynne.
Well, thank God you have come. You're home again. My darling has come back. My beauty has come home.
I've been through so much.
I can imagine.
We left during Holy Week. It was cold then. Charlotta talked the whole way doing magic tricks. Why did you stick me with Charlotta?
You couldn't possibly travel all alone, darling, at 17.
We arrived in Paris. It was cold there too, snowing. My French is terrible. Mama was living on the fifth floor. I came in and her apartment was filled with French people, ladies and an old priest with religious pamphlets. And it was smoky, so depressing. I suddenly began to feel sorry for Mama, so sorry. I held her in my arms and couldn't let go. Mama was holding me tight too. She was crying.
Don't say anything. Nothing.
She had already sold her villa near Mentone, and she had nothing left. Nothing. And I had no rubles left either, only enough to make it back home. And Mama doesn't understand. We would sit in the train station to eat lunch, and she would order the most expensive thing and give the waiter a whole ruble. Charlotta, too. And Yasha would order something expensive for himself. It was so dreadful. You know Mama's lackey, Yasha. We brought him here.
I've seen the scoundrel.
Well, how was it here? Did you pay the interest?
With what?
Oh. My God, my God.
The estate will be put up for sale in August.
My God. Bah!
Oh, this is what I would like to give him.
Varya, did he propose? He does love you. Why don't the two of you talk it over? What are you waiting for?
I don't think anything will come of it. He is so busy all the time. He doesn't care about me. God bless him. It's very difficult for me to see him. Everyone talks about our wedding. Everyone congratulates us. But in fact, there's nothing to it. It's like my worst nightmare. You have a brooch in the shape of a little bee.
Mama bought it. And in Paris, I flew in a balloon.
My darling has arrived. My beauty has come home. I work all day long, darling, doing housework, and I'm always daydreaming. If we could marry you to a rich man, then I wouldn't worry. I would go to a monastery, then to Kiev, to Moscow, go from one holy place to the next. I would walk and walk the bliss.
The birds are singing in the orchard. What time is it now?
It must be nearly 3. It's time for you to sleep, darling. The bliss.
Don't tease her, Petya. You can see that she's suffering.
She's such a busybody. She pokes her nose into business that isn't hers. The whole summer, she hasn't given me or Anya any peace. She was afraid we would have a romance. What business is it of hers? Anyway, it never even crossed my mind. I am so far from that vulgarity. I am above love.
And I, therefore, must be below love. Why isn't Leonid here? I just need to know, is the estate sold or not? This is so terrible for me. I don't know what to think. I'm losing my self-control. I could scream. I could do something very foolish. Save me, Petya. Say something. Speak.
Whether the estate was sold today or not, what difference does it make? We've been down this path before. Now there is no turning back. Calm down, dear. You need to stop fooling yourself. For once in your life, you need to look at the truth.
What truth? You see so clearly what truth is, but it's as though I've gone blind. I see nothing. You fervently solve all these important problems, but tell me, my friend, isn't it because you are young and have never really known life? Yes. You look so boldly into the future and see a brave new world, but have you ever had to live with your own idealistic visions? You are braver, more honest, more profound than we. But think about it. Be a little generous. Have mercy on me. You see, I was born here. My father and mother lived here, my grandfather. I love this house. At the cherry orchard, I don't understand my own life. And if it's really to be sold, then sell me along with it. You know my son drowned here. Have pity on me, good kind man.
You know I deeply sympathize with you.
Yes, but you should have said that differently, very differently. Today my soul is so heavy you can't imagine. It's so noisy here tonight. My soul trembles at every sound. I'm trembling all over, but I can't be left alone. I'm terrified of my own thoughts. Don't condemn me, Petya. I love you as I do my own family, and I would gladly have you marry Anya. Only, my friend, you must finish your studies. You let fate toss you from one place to another. It's so strange. Isn't it true? Yes. And you ought to do something about that beard. Let it grow out somehow. You are so funny.
I do not wish to be handsome.
Oh, that telegram was from Paris. I receive one every day. That ridiculous man is sick again. Things aren't going well with him. He asks for forgiveness. He begs me to come, and I really should go to Paris to be with him. Don't look at me that way, Petya. What can I do? He's sick. He's alone, unhappy, and who will look after him? Who will keep him from making mistakes? Who will give him his medicine? And the truth is, I love him. Yes, I love him. I love him. He's a stone around my neck, and I will sink to the bottom with him, but I love that stone, and I cannot live without it. Don't think badly of me, Petya. Don't say anything. Don't speak.
Forgive my bluntness, but for God's sake, he robbed you.
No, 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 don't talk like that.
He's a parasite. You're the only one who doesn't see this. He's a rotten parasite, a non-entity, not...
You are 28 or 29, but you are still a little schoolboy.
Very well.
You should be a man. At your age, you should have someone who loves you, and you should love. You yourself should fall in love. Yes. Yes, you have no true purity. You're just a prig. A ridiculous, eccentric, a freak, a virgin?
What is she saying?
I am above love. You are not above love, but as Fierce would say, you are a nincompoop not to have a lover at your age.
It is horrible. What is she saying? It is horrible. I cannot. I am leaving. Everything is over between us.
Petya, wait a moment. Silly man, I was just joking. Petya!
Uncle Vanya. First published in 1898, Uncle Vanya is unique among Chekhov's major plays because it is essentially an extensive reworking of his earlier play entitled The Wood Demon. Uncle Vanya portrays the visit of an elderly professor and his glamorous, much younger second wife, Yelena, to the rural estate that supports their urban lifestyle. Two friends, Vanya, brother of the professor's late first wife, who has long managed the estate, and Astrov, the local doctor, both fall under Yelena's spell while bemoaning the ennui of their provincial existence. Sonia, the professor's daughter by his first wife, who has worked with Vanya to keep the estate going, suffers from her unrequited feelings for Dr. Astrov. Matters are brought to a crisis when the professor announces his intention to sell the estate, Vanya and Sonia's home, with a view to investing the proceeds to achieve a higher income for himself and his wife. We have 5 scenes from Uncle Vanya to share with you. The first features Devon Burningham as Vanya and Harmony Thompson as Yelena. Next, you'll hear Morgan Luce as Sonia and Dakota Davis as Astrov. Then Jessica Moss will play Sonia and Emmeline Morris will play Yelena. Following that, we'll have Caleb Sager as Astrov and Shannon Sawyer as Yelena. And finally, our final scene from Uncle Vanya, Dylan Harrison will portray Astrov and Catherine Ware will play Yelena.
I'm completely exhausted with him. I can barely stand on my feet. You're exhausted with him and I with myself. This is the third night I haven't slept.
Something is wrong in this house. Your mother hates everything, except her own pamphlets and the professor. The professor's irritated. He doesn't trust me. He's afraid of you. Sonia is angry with her father, angry with me, and hasn't talked to me for 2 weeks. You hate my husband and openly hold your own mother in contempt. I'm short-tempered, and at least 20 times today I started to cry. There's something very wrong in this house.
Shall we cut the philosophy, please?
You, Ivan Petrovic, are educated, intelligent, and you must see that the world is not being destroyed by thieves and fires and wars, but rather by hatred, hostility from all these petty squabbles. You shouldn't add to the noisy complaining around us. You should be helping to find peace in your own family.
Help me find peace in myself, my darling.
Stop. Go away.
Soon, it'll stop raining, and everything in nature will be refreshed and alive. I alone will not be refreshed by the storm. Day and night, I'm strangled by the idea that my life is irrevocably lost. That I'm dead, that I've wasted my life, that I spent my life on trifles. Here, take my love. Take my life. What good are they to me? What have I done with them? My feelings are dying away in vain like sunbeams falling into a dark pit. I'm dying.
When you talk to me about your love, I just go numb and I don't know what to say. Forgive me, I have nothing to say to you. Good night.
If you only knew how I suffer from the thought that next to me in this very house, another life is dying. Yours. What are you waiting for? What damned righteous morality stops you? Don't you see?
Ivan Petrovic, you're drunk.
Possibly. Possibly.
Where's the doctor?
He's here. He's spending the night. Possibly. Possibly. Everything is possible.
Why are you drinking so much?
Because it makes me feel alive. Don't try to stop me, Helene.
You never used to drink so much, and you never talked so much. Go to sleep. I'm bored to death with you.
My darling. Beautiful. Marvelous.
Leave me alone. This is just disgusting.
He's gone. I first met you 10 years ago at my darling sister's, remember? You were 17 and I was 37. Why didn't I fall in love with you and propose to you then? It would have been so easy. And today, he would be my wife. Yes. Tonight, both of us would be awakened by the storm. You'd be afraid of the thunder, and I would take you in my arms and whisper, "Don't be afraid, little darling. I'm here." Oh, what marvelous thoughts. How wonderful. I'm laughing. But my God, I'm so mixed up. Why am I old? Why doesn't she understand me? The way she talks, her stupid morality, her silly prattling about making peace in the world. I hate it so much.
Mikhailovich, you're not sleeping, are you? Do you have a minute?
One moment. What can I do for you?
You can drink all you want if you can stand it, but I beg you, don't let my uncle drink. It's not good for him.
Fine, we won't drink together again. I'm going home, signed and sealed. The sun will be up by the time they harness the horses.
It's still raining. Wait until the morning.
The storm's almost over. We just got a little bit of it. I'm going, and please Don't send for me again for your father. I tell him it's gout. He says it's rheumatism. I ask him to lie down, and he sits up. And today, he wouldn't even speak to me.
He's spoiled. Do you want to have a bite to eat?
Sure.
I love to eat at night. There should be something on the sideboard. People say he was quite a ladies' man all his life, and his ladies have spoiled him. Ah, here, have some cheese.
I ate nothing today, only drank. Your father is a difficult personality. May I? We're alone, so maybe I can speak more openly. You know, I don't think I'd last a month in this house. I'd be choked to death. Your father is completely buried in his gout and in his books. Your Uncle Vanya in his depression, your grandmother, and finally, your stepmother.
What about my stepmother?
Well, to look at her, she's perfection. Face, voice, clothes, and soul. She's beautiful, but in reality, all she does is eat, sleep, stroll around, and bewitch us all with her beauty. Nothing else. She has no responsibilities. Everyone waits on her, true? An idle life can't be a good one. But perhaps I'm being too hard on her. I'm not happy with my life, like your Uncle Vanya, and we've become a couple of old grumblers.
You're discontented with life?
Well, of course I love life in general, but our Russian provincial life is so small-minded and mean, and I hate it with all my soul. You know, when you're walking alone in the forest at night, and sometimes, if you're lucky enough, you'll see a light burning in the distance, and suddenly nothing bothers you anymore. Not the darkness, or your weariness, or the branches scratching at your face. I work harder, you know this, than anyone in this district, and sometimes I'm terribly unlucky and suffer unbearably. But the truth is, I see no light in the distance. I have no hope. I don't like people. I haven't loved anyone for a long time.
No one?
No one. I feel some tenderness towards your nurse for old time's sake. But the peasants are dull and backwards and they live in filth, and it's just as hard to talk to the intelligentsia. All of it exhausts me. I have just as plenty of nice acquaintances who can't think for themselves or see past their own noses, and those who are more interesting have taken themselves up with self-reflection. They bellyache all the time. They hate everyone. They think everyone is beneath them, and when they meet you, they label you immediately. Oh, he's a psychopath. Oh, he's an eccentric. Oh, he's a freak. I love the forest. That's insane. I don't eat meat. That's really strange. And no, that's impossible to have a true relationship with nature or people anymore. That's not possible.
No, please. I beg you, don't drink anymore. It's not right for you.
Why?
You are such an elegant and noble, and you have such a gentle voice, and you, more than anyone I know, you're wonderful. Why do you want to be like ordinary people who drink and play cards? Oh, don't do that, I beg of you. You say that people don't create, but only destroy all that is given to them from God. Why then? Why are you destroying yourself? You shouldn't. You mustn't. I beg you. I implore.
All right. I won't drink anymore.
Give me your word.
Word of honor.
Oh, thank you.
Pasta, I'm sober. You see, I'm completely sober, and I will remain so till the end of my days. So let's continue. Where was I? My time has already passed. It's too late for me. I've grown old. I'm overworked. I've become vulgar. I have no feelings, and it looks like I'm no longer interested in making attachments. I don't love anyone, and I'm sure I'll never fall in love again. But what does still touch me is beauty. I don't seem indifferent towards it, and I have a feeling that if Yelena Andreevna wanted to, she could turn my head in a day. But you know that's not love. Not real love.
autumn roses. So lovely. So sad.
It's September already.
How will we ever get through the winter here?
Where's the doctor?
In Uncle Vanya's room. He's doing some writing. I'm glad Uncle Vanya left. I need to talk with you.
Oh, about what?
About what?
Oh, well, shh, my dear.
I'm so plain.
You have beautiful hair.
No. When a woman is plain, they tell her, you have beautiful eyes, you have beautiful hair. I've been in love with him for 6 years. I love him more than my own mother. The minute I hear him arrive, I can already feel his hand in mine. And I wait at the door. I wait. And I have a feeling that any second now he will walk in. I come to you to talk about him every spare moment. He's here every day, but he doesn't look at me. He doesn't see. I am in agony. I have no hope left, none. No. Oh, God, give me strength. I've been praying all night. I just need to talk to him, look at him, just being near him. I have no pride left. I can't control myself. Yesterday, I even told Uncle Vanya that I loved him. I have no shame at all. Even the servants, everyone knows that I love him. Everyone.
Does he?
No, he doesn't notice a thing.
He's a strange man. You know what? Why don't I have a talk with him? I'll be careful. Just a hint here or there. Really, how long can you live with this uncertainty? Shall I? Excellent. Either he loves you or he doesn't. It won't be difficult to find out. Don't be embarrassed, my darling. Don't worry. I'll be very careful. He won't notice a thing. We just need to find out, yes or no. If no, then we can't have him come here again. Yes? It's easier when he's not around. Let's not put it off. I'll talk to him now. He wanted to show me some drawings. Go tell him that I'd like to see him.
Will you tell me the honest truth?
Yes, of course. It seems to me that the truth, whatever it is better than living with uncertainty. Count on me, my darling.
Yes. Yes, I'll tell him that you want to see his drawings. No, uncertainty is better. At least there's hope.
Did you say something?
Nothing.
Oh, there's nothing worse than knowing someone else's secret and not being able to help. He's not in love with her. That's obvious. But why shouldn't he marry her? She's not pretty, but for a country doctor at his age, she'd be a wonderful wife. She's a clever girl. So kind, pure. No, something's wrong, all wrong. Poor darling. In this stifling atmosphere where the only people who come into her life are vulgar boors who live to eat, drink, and sleep. And then in comes this handsome, fascinating, intelligent man, and out of the darkness a bright moon rises. How could she resist such a man? Uh-oh. I think I'm a little in love with him myself. Yes, the truth is I'm bored without him. I smile when I think about him. Uncle Vanya says there's a mermaid in my veins. For once in your life, let go. Can I? Maybe I could. To fly like a bird far away from all of you, from your dead faces and your boring conversations. Oh, to forget you all exist on this earth. But I'm such a coward. I'm so timid. And it's always my conscience wearing me down. He's here every day. I know why he comes, and I feel guilty. I just want to fall on my knees before Sonia, to apologize, to cry.
Hello, you wanted to see my drawings?
Yesterday you told me that you'd show me your work. Are you free?
Yes, of course. Where were you born?
In Petersburg.
And where did you go to school?
At the conservatory.
Oh, then I don't think this will interest you.
Why? It's true, I don't know much about the countryside, but I've read a great deal.
I have my own desk in this house, in Ivan Petrovich's room. When I'm totally exhausted, completely dead to the world, I drop everything that I'm doing and run here. I can lose myself for an hour. Ivan Petrovich and Sonia Alexandrovna click away at their accounts, and I sit beside them at my own table. It's heaven, warm and peaceful. But I don't permit myself this pleasure often, maybe once a month. Now, look here. This is a map of our district as it was 50 years ago. The dark and light green colors represent forests. Half of this entire area was dominated by forests. Where the red grid lies over the green, that shows goats and elk. This shows you all the flora and fauna. In this lake, there lived swans, ducks, geese, and as the old ones used to say, a mess of birds, millions of them, filling the sky as far as you could see. In addition to the villages you see here, there were small farms, settlements, monasteries, and mills, and many, many cattle. You can see that in the light blue. In this village, the light blue is particularly heavy. That's because there were whole herds of cattle, and on each farm, at least 3 horses. Now, look at this one. This is a map of the area 25 years ago. You'll notice that forests comprise only a third of the entire area. No more goats, but still elk. The green and the light blue are much paler, and so on. Now, this is a map of our district as it is today. Notice that the green's only spattered here and there, only in spots, not throughout. The elk have vanished, and the swans, and the wood grouses. There's no trace of the small farms, settlements, monasteries, and mills. In general, it's a picture of gradual but complete degeneration, and obviously in 10 or 15 years it'll be complete. You might say this is natural evolution, the old order giving way to the new. Yes, that's true too, but if these desiccated forests were replaced by highways and railroads and by factories and schools, then we would see healthier people, richer, more intelligent. But believe me, nothing of the kind is happening. This district is plagued by the same swamps, mosquitoes, the same non-existent roads, poverty, typhus, diphtheria, fires. Yes, we have desiccation and degeneration, not because of growth and progress, but due to stagnation and complete carelessness. When a frozen, hungry, sick man tries to hang on to a shred of life, tries to protect his children, he'll do anything to satisfy hunger and grab some warmth. He'll even destroy everything around him, never thinking about tomorrow. So, you see, everything is being destroyed and all for nothing. There's no chance to build a future. I can see by the look on your face this doesn't interest you.
I understand so little about this.
There's nothing to understand. It just doesn't interest you.
To tell you the truth, I've been thinking of something else. Forgive me. I need to interrogate you a little. And I'm embarrassed. I don't know where to begin.
Interrogate me?
Yes, just a little. Innocently, I promise. Let's sit. This is in regards to someone we both know. We'll speak candidly, as friends, openly. We'll have this little talk and we'll forget about it, yes?
Yes.
It's about my stepdaughter, Sonia. Do you like her?
Yes, I respect her.
Do you like her as a woman?
No.
Just two or three more words and we're done. Have you noticed anything?
Nothing.
You don't love her. I can see it in your eyes. She is suffering. Understand this, and please stop coming here.
Huh. I'm too old for this. I have no time. No. When do I have time?
What an unpleasant conversation. I'm so upset. I feel as if I've been dragging along 1,000 pounds, but thank God it's finished. We'll forget about it. It'll be as if we never spoke, and you'll leave. You're an intelligent man. You understand.
If you'd only told me about this a month or two ago, then I probably would have. And if she is suffering, then of course. Only I don't understand one thing. Why did you need to interrogate me? Oh, you are something.
What do you mean?
All right, let's say Sonia's suffering. I'll admit that. But why did you have to talk to me about it? Why you? Oh, don't look so surprised. You know very well why I come by here every day. You know all too well. Adorable little beast of prey. Oh, don't look surprised. I'm an old hand at this.
Beast of prey? I don't know what you are talking about.
Beautiful tigress. You need victims. Oh, here I've been doing absolutely nothing for a month. Putting everything on hold. I ride here every day to see you. And you just love it. Well, yes, I'm conquered. You knew that without interrogation. Tear me to pieces, eat me up.
Have you lost your mind?
You're shy.
I'm a lot better than you think, I promise you.
Oh, today I'll leave. I won't stay, but where shall we meet? Tell me quickly where. They might come in at any moment. Oh, what a gorgeous, luscious... one kiss. Just to kiss your beautiful hair.
I swear to you.
Why swear? Don't swear. Don't say anything. Oh, what a beauty you are. What hands.
Please, leave. You have completely forgotten yourself.
Just tell me where we should meet tomorrow. It's inevitable, darling. We must meet.
I'm leaving. Farewell.
Already?
The carriage is here.
Farewell.
You promised me that you'd leave here today, too.
I remember. I'm leaving now. Are you frightened? Is it so terrible?
Yes.
Then stay, yes? Tomorrow in the forest, we could...
No, it's already decided, and... That's why I can look at you so courageously, is because we're leaving. I ask one thing of you. Please think well of me. I want you to respect me.
Please. Stay. I beg you. Admit it, you have nothing better to do on this earth. Your life is meaningless. You don't do anything, so sooner or later you'll have to give in to your feelings. It's inevitable. So why do it in Kharkov or Kursk? Wouldn't it be better here in this beautiful countryside? It's poetic at least. Here in this lovely autumn with the forest and the tumbledown, romantic estates, the way Turgenev wrote about them.
You're so silly. I'm a little angry at you, but all the same, I'll remember you fondly. You're an interesting, special man. We'll never see each other again, so why... Why hide it? I fell a little in love with you too. Let's shake hands and part as friends. Please think well of me.
Yes. Go. I know you are a good, sincere person, but there's something strange about you. You came here with your husband this summer, and all of us work here suddenly threw everything aside to dance attendance on you and your husband's gout. Both of you have infected us all with your idleness. I was completely captivated. I've done nothing for a whole month, and during that time, people fell ill. The peasants let their cattle trample on my plantings in the forest. Everywhere you and your husband set foot, destruction follows. I'm joking, of course, but all the same, it's strange. And I'm absolutely sure if you had stayed any longer, the devastation would have been complete. I would certainly perish, and you... Well, it wouldn't be so good for you either. Yes, you're leaving. Finita la commedia.
I'll take this pencil to remember you.
It's funny, isn't it? We start to get to know one another, and suddenly, with one stroke, we'll never see each other again. I guess it's always like that in this world. Well, since we're alone, and before Uncle Vanya comes in with his bouquet of roses, permit me to kiss you to say farewell, yes? Well, here. Fine.
I wish you all the best. I'll whip it for once in my life. I've got to go.
Yes. Go. If the carriage is here, you'd better leave.
Yes, I hear them coming.
Finita.
The Seagull. We'll conclude this program with a scene from Chekhov's play, The Seagull. Written in 1895, the opening night of the first production in 1896 was a famous failure. The actress playing Nina was so intimidated by the hostility of the audience that she lost her voice. Chekhov, completely horrified, left the audience before the final two acts. When supporters wrote him to say that the production later had become a success, he assumed that they were merely trying to be kind. When Konstantin Stanislavsky, the seminal Russian theater practitioner of the time, who we've mentioned before, he directed it in 1898 at the Moscow Art Theater. And in that incarnation, the play was a triumph. Stanislavsky's production became one of the greatest events in the history of Russian theater and one of the greatest new developments in the history of world drama. The play dramatizes the romantic and artistic conflicts between four characters. The famous middlebrow story writer, Boris Trigorin, the ingenue Nina, the fading actress, Irina Arkadina, and her son, the symbolist playwright, Konstantin Trepliev. Trigorin is the lover of fading actress Arkadina, and he writes, "If you ever need my life, come and take it." Nina, a young ingenue and the beloved muse of Arkadina's playwright's son, Konstantin, absorbs this statement completely. When the two actresses, one young and one aging, and the two writers, one successful and one struggling, meet at the family estate one fateful summer, their loyalty, love, and ambition are put to the ultimate test. The first of Anton Chekhov's realistic plays, The Seagull, is a remarkable drama about passion, compromise, and the unknowable, untouchable concept of art. This is Kylie Whittison as Nina and Eric Larson as Konstantin from the final scene of The Seagull.
Nina? Nina, it's you. I just had this feeling all day. It's been awful. Oh, my dear, my darling, she's come. Don't cry. We mustn't cry.
Someone is here.
No one.
Lock the doors. They'll come in.
No one will come in.
I know Irina Nikolaevna is here. Lock the doors.
This one doesn't have a lock. I'll block it with a chair. Don't be frightened. No one will come in.
Let me look at you. It's warm. Good. This was the drawing room? Have I changed very much?
Yes. You're thinner, and your eyes are bigger, Nina. Nina, it's so strange to see you. Why wouldn't you let me visit you? Why did you wait till now? Come here. I know you've been staying here almost a week. Several times a day I went to see you. I stood under your window like a poor beggar.
I was afraid that you hated me. Every night I dream that you see me and don't recognize me. If you only knew. I've been coming here every day since the moment I arrived to the lake. I've been at your door so many times, but I couldn't bring myself to come in. Let's sit. We'll sit and we'll talk. It's nice here, warm, cozy. Listen. The wind. Turgenev has a passage. Happy is he who has a roof over his head and a warm corner to rest on such nights. I, Siegel. No, that's not right. What did I start to say? Yes, Turgenev, and may the Lord help all homeless wanderers.
Nina, please don't cry, Nina.
It's nothing. I need to do this. I haven't cried for 2 years. Yesterday, late in the evening, I went to the garden to see if our theater was still there, and it was. I started crying for the first time in 2 years, and suddenly I felt more clear. You see, I'm not crying anymore. So you've become a writer. You're a writer. I, an actress, we're both right in the middle of it. I was so happy as a child. I used to wake up each morning and sing. I loved you. I dreamed about glory, and now. Tomorrow morning early, I have to go to Yelates. Third class with the peasants. And in Yelates, disgusting merchants who proclaim their love of art will palm me with compliments. Horrible.
Why Yelates?
I've got an engagement for the whole winter. It's time to go.
Nina, I cursed you. I hated you. I tore up your letters and photographs, but I have always known that my soul is bound to yours forever. I don't have the strength to stop loving you, Nina. Ever since I lost you, my life has been unbearable. I'm suffering. My youth seems to have vanished. I feel like I'm 90 years old. I call your name. I kiss the ground you walk on. I see your face everywhere. I see that tender smile which used to shine on me in the best years of my life.
Why do you talk to me like this? Why?
I'm so lonely. I don't feel close to anybody. I'm so cold. It's like I live in a cave and everything I write is so cold and stale. Dead. Stay here, Nina. I beg you, or at least let me go with you. Nina, why? For God's sake, why, Nina?
My carriage is waiting at the gate. Don't see me off. I'll go by myself. Give me some water.
Where are you going now?
To town. Is Irina Nikolaevna here?
Yes. On Thursday, my uncle got worse. We telegraphed for her to come.
Why did you say that you kiss the ground I walk on? I ought to be killed. I'm so tired. I need to rest. I, Siegel, no, that's not it. Actress, yes. And he is here? Yes. Yes, no, it's nothing. Yes. He didn't believe in the theater. He always laughed at my dreams, and little by little, I stopped believing in them too. I lost heart. Then came the miseries of love, jealousy, and the constant fear for the baby's life. I became petty, worthless, really. My acting was so amateurish. I didn't know what to do with my hands. I didn't know how to stand on the stage. I wasn't in control of my voice. You have no idea how awful it is when you know you're acting badly. I, Siegel, no, that's not right. Do you remember? You shot a seagull. Once upon a time, a man comes along and for no reason at all kills it. A subject for a short story. That's not it. What was I saying? Yes. Yes, I was talking about the theater. But now it's different. I'm the real thing, an actress. I act with delight, with rapture. It's as if I'm intoxicated on the stage and I feel so beautiful. And since I've been here, I've been walking back and forth, and I've begun to feel my strength coming back. I know now. I understand, Kostya. Then in our business, it doesn't matter if it's acting or writing. The most important thing is not fame or brilliance or those things I've always dreamed about. It's the ability to endure, to have patience. We have to be able to bear our own cross and believe. I believe. And to me, it's not so painful. And when I think about my own calling, then I'm not afraid anymore.
You're on a journey. You know where you're going. But I'm still wandering around in a chaos of daydreams and images. I don't know where I'm going or why. I don't know what my calling is.
Shh. I'm going. Farewell. When I become an important actress, be sure to come and see me. Do you promise? But now it's late. I can barely stand on my feet. I'm so hungry, I need to eat.
Stay, I'll get you some supper.
No, don't see me off. I'll go by myself. My carriage is nearby. So she brought him with her. Yes, it makes no difference. When you see Trigorin, don't say anything. I love him. I love him more than ever, more than before. A subject for a short story. I love passionately. I love desperately. It was so nice, Kostya. Remember? How warm, pure, joyful life felt, like gentle, graceful flowers. Remember? People, lions, eagles, and partridges. Horned deer, geese. Spiders, silent fishes dwelling in the water. Starfish and those that cannot be seen with our eyes. In a word, all lives, having accomplished their doleful circle, dead. Already thousands of centuries have passed since the earth has borne one living creature, and in vain the poor moon shines her light. No longer do the cranes awaken in the meadow. No longer do the maybuds sing in the linden groves.
ISU On Stage is produced by Jonathan Armstrong and edited by Joseph Emmanuel. The theme music for this program is composed by Tom Hassenflug. I'm Jamin Anderson, inviting you back next week for ISU On Stage as we listen to completed works from the Idaho State University Music Department's Commercial Music Program. Thank you for joining us.